Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And it is Friday on the front porch on the horn. This is Friday, the 28th day of August, 2015. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. That's where we have the rousing, real-time, multimedia, nightly extravaganza that you can participate in, free and easy. Good evening to Anatole and Arthur, capably moderated at the moment by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. And we're off with a jingle of the cowbell. Front day on the 14th. No, damn it. This is... Don't confuse me, Arthur. No, it's Monday and yesterday was... Yep. Friday. Friday on the front porch, dadgummit. Absolutely. And you're welcome to participate here in about an hour in the extraordinary, ordinary Friday roundtable here at the Horn. We have a rousing good time there. If you've never done so, it's very easy to involve yourself in the group. You can always just call via Skype. Hello, Skype. Yes, you can always just reach out on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and you'll be right there in the thick of things as we get the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable gathered together and start the conversation here, like I said, in about an hour. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and the way we keep all of this going and have for more than 10 years is through listener contributions. No, we don't go out and knock on the doors of Amalgamated Fracking or Northrop Grumman like National Petroleum Radio does, and we don't have fundraisers where we send out boxes of overpriced, underflavored chocolates or anything like that. We simply put it in the most blunt terms. If you want independent media, if you want independent conversation radio, well, it has to be supported. We try to raise $200 an evening. Thank you to Jan and Jerry out in Vegas. We have knocked that down to 180 this evening. So we got 180 for tonight, and then we will wipe out the month of August come Monday with another 200. If you want to do that all together this evening, that's fine too. But we got 180 to go this evening. We're somewhere in the $450 range on the very, very last of the equipment fund to try to take care of a couple of little ancillary extras that go with the gizmos we're getting ready to purchase to be able to do a little terrestrial broadcasting from time to time. Well, diddly damn, Rick still has the stream, huh? What a pity. Well, let's see. Let me see if I can work on that. Or maybe it's latency, I don't know. It may change in a minute. No, we're 4 minutes in. Who am I trying to kid? Stand by. Oh, it's working after all. Sparky says, no, Bob, you're good. Well, thank you, Sparky, thank you. That makes life a little bit simpler. It doesn't quite break up the chain of the stream of consciousness quite as much as it ordinarily does. So, good. Good, 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 good. Anyway, if you want to help us keep this all on the air, $5 at a time, $10 at a time, it is all manifestly helpful. The contribute tab is at headonradionetwork.com under the contribute. There's an interface there. It's got some stuff in it that doesn't need to be there, but we're not in control of it because that's PayPal stuff. But you don't have to fill it in. You know, the part about how Mr. Spacely likes to have his eggs done every morning by his captive robot. You can just get to the next screen, and that's where you can choose between Visa, MasterCard, American Express, your PayPal account, what have you. And that is what keeps us on the air. So thank you very kindly in advance. If you prefer to deal with the United States Postal Service, well, the mailing address for checks and money orders is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And of course, those have to be made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid, because I never see them. That's what Boss Man Wayne deals with. So it is the last program of the last full week of August. It's the last Friday on the front porch of August 2015. Autumn will soon be here. My feet are already getting cold in anticipation. In fact, I did a tech check earlier this evening, or this afternoon, really, just to make sure that the heated floor mat still works. Yay, thank God, it does. So that's a very, very good, that's a good sign. It'll soon be propane buying season again here. Yay, not. Yeah, that, I am. I'm a cheap bastard, Carol. Carol Baker said, you know, if we sold buckets of pudding, we'd make more money. Potato soup, maybe? Jim Baker gives me soup and Jesus prayers, you cheap bastard. I know. I know. One of these days. Actually, there is there's a little something in the way of a promotion coming for the month of September. I'm not going to give that away. I don't mean not going to give it away. I mean, I'm not going to say exactly what it is because I've got to lay in some supplies and, you know, but just a little something nice, if you know what I mean. We don't often have those things, but just as a way of saying thank you. So be thinking about that come September, which isn't here yet. Now, tonight, golly, we're kind of all over the place. Lots of different alternatives for us to ponder. From the usual suspects to some cultural sort of stuff that I think... Once in a while, we need to think about these things, what it is that, how it is that we go about being human. And there's big stuff. There's so big stuff. And then there's stuff that let's jump in and see if we can make some sense out of this. Shall we? Yes. Okay. Where to begin? Hey, A is for Apple and Alabamistan. T is for Talibama. But, you know, nobody in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, has more upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christian family values. Nobody has more than Talibama does. They're down there thanking God, for thanking Jesus for President Trump. And, of course, the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered patriots in Talibama squealed like stuck pigs when the Supreme Court ruled that two men or two women could get married to each other. You know, the women to the women and the men to the men. Because they got traditional family values down there. They sure do. And they understand, because they listen to people like Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins, Dover to the Family Research Council, and they listen to people like that proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher, at the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. They listen to folks like that when they explain to them that the Homer Sectionals is going to destroy traditional marriage in Merca. We'll take the other part as read. The governor of Talibama is Robert Bentley. And he being a Republican, understands that God made Adam and Eve, and not Adam and Steve. So it is with considerable sadness that I have to tell you that the Supreme Court, in legalizing marriage equality for the LGBT community all over the new United States of America except Brown County, Kentucky, well, it has claimed, gay marriage has claimed its first traditional family values, Christian upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing marriage. It has. We knew it had happened. It has. And it happened. All the victims, won't you please think and pray, think of and pray for the victims. Upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, traditional, family values, evangelical, fundamentalist, Alabama governor, Robert Bentley, is getting a divorce. Now don't blame the governor. It's not his fault. That Herod and she-devil that he was married to done served divorce papers on him today in open defiance of the words of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Sweet little baby Jesus down there in the manger, just a-wanting everybody to have traditional Christian family values, weddings and marriages and stuff, and have their pizza delivered to them, and not pizza delivery to heathen, atheist, nasty, gay weddings. No. That's right. That vile, sin-filled daughter of Eve served divorce papers on Governor Bentley. Even though Governor Bentley done said heterosexual marriage is a natural reality and same-sex marriage destroys the rights of children to be connected to their biological parents. Even though he said like 81% of the people of Alabama believe that marriage is at least in the biblical sense is defined as at least, mind you, between one man and one woman. Well, Mrs. Bentley, filed for divorce today. ABC 33 reports it, and they got the divorce papers and everything, and the divorce paper says there exists a conflict of personalities which destroys the legitimate aims of matrimony, and all possibilities of reconciliation are futile. Thanks, Obama. Thanks, homosexuals. You done destroyed a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered family values, traditional family values, marriage, and to the His Excellency, the Governor of Alabama, Stan. I hope you feel good. I hope you feel proud. Look what you done. Did. No, wait, what? That Mrs. Bentley is not going to run off to a lesbian commune and write poetry in the style of Sappho? She's not, really? She's just sick of that squirmy, scrawny, skinny, tight-lipped, hypocritical, sorry, miserable. Oh, okay. Oh, that irreconcilable differences. They can't get along no more. Because they've had, I'm sure for quite a long time, Mr. and Mrs. Bentley have had a strange and wonderful relationship. He's strange and she's wonderful. But she can't take it no more. Even though Robert Bentley, His Excellency the Governor of Alabama, said Alabamians should work together to protect traditional marriage. The two-parent family provides the best environment of stability, discipline, responsibility, and character. Well, of course, Carol Baker, of course. She says, I blame our gay, secret, Kenyan, Muslim, wrong-colored president. And who else would you blame except for maybe Satan? That's always a possibility, but then again, it could be they're one and the same. You know, after he declares martial law and refuses to step down as president of the new United States, it'll be pretty clear he's the Antichrist now, won't it? Nah, I don't think you can blame the gay folks for this one. And being as how he's in that high-profile governating seat there on Goat Hill in Montgomery, he couldn't just do what the Bible recommends and beat the living daylights out of her. No, because it's not at all well when the Alabama State Police in their gray patrol cars has to pull up and take you out in cuffs. The governor did release a statement. It said, and I quote, the governor asks that you please respect the privacy of the Bentley family during this difficult time. There will be no further comment. In the pleadings, Mrs. Bentley says, their marriage has suffered an irretrievable breakdown and that further attempts at reconciliation are impractical and not in the best interests of the parties. They have been, they were married. And in many ways, look, marriages in America, even without considering the demonic powers of the gay community to cause volcanoes and earthquakes and mold on bread, most marriages, well, not most, but fully half of all marriages end in divorce before the five-year mark. People just look up and go, oh, ain't working, wasn't what I thought it was. And under the best of circumstances, there are no children involved, and people go their separate ways. Those are the best of circumstances. But the Bentleys have been married, and in many ways, like I said, this is the saddest kind of marriage failure. They've been married since July the 24th, 1965. Mr. and Mrs. Bentley have been married since I was 2.5 years old. They got married about 4 years after my parents did. They separated in January of this year. 65 to 05. Great God Almighty, they separated just short of their 50th wedding anniversary. Isn't that sad? I wonder how much Mrs. Bentley had to put up with before she finally said, to hell with all this. But it's okay. Because Robert Bentley's already been elected to his second term as governor of Alabama, so he won't have to face the electorate again and deal with uncomfortable questions from them about the fact that he's taken Jesus's rules on marriage out and just urinating all over them. There they were, just as Christian could be. And no amount of prayer, no amount of counseling could save the marriage. And I wish Mrs. Bentley the very best in life. 49 years of marriage. And you just can't stick it out for the remainder of your natural born days. Wow. Oh, a little something to put on your upcoming events calendar, just so you can be ready when the hits the fan. Remember James O'Keefe, the charged with felonies, convicted of misdemeanors, plea bargain guy who broke into, who was it, Senator Mary Landrieu's office and tried to wiretap her and produced all of those dummied up, faked up, frauded up, ginned up, rubed up videos that he edits ever so heavily to try to make people say things that, Shirley Sherrod comes to mind. Remember her? The Obama administration threw her under the bus over an O'Keefe video. When in fact she had done nothing wrong. Well, heads up. Apparently, James O'Keefe has a new editing suite on his computer, and he's got him some new video, and he's going to be making a big splashy announcement at 10 a.m. Tuesday, September the 1st. That would be this coming Tuesday. And they've even rented out the First Amendment room of the National Press Club. Ew-wee! Money must be good over there at the Project Veritas outfit. Mm-hmm. This is going to be big stuff. The easily conned, easily deluded, easily deceived for-profit media will probably go absolutely bat squeeze crazy over this one. Release of new undercover video exposing illegal activity conducted by high-level employees within Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. Yeah. Poor fella's been feeling kind of lonesome and unloved ever since the Planned Parenthood videos. Irish Dave pointing out with regard to the Bentley divorce. I blame the Chinese hackers. I was thinking that traditional marrying in Bamistan was a man, a woman's, and Ashley Madison, since I did the math, and they came in first in Bamistan. Of course, Alabama has one of your higher rates of sexually transmitted diseases, one of your higher rates of teen pregnancy, out-of-wedlock pregnancy, one of your higher rates of divorce. But bless their little hearts, they're working real hard on their family values down there. They work every Sunday. And sometimes, no matter how hard you work, it just don't work out. I wonder if they'll drum Mrs. Bentley out of the evangelical fundamentalist congregation of which she is a part. I don't know. What else, as we consider topics for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening? Well, lots. I am trying to find, because I had it in the browser before the machine crashed. Because I think it is noteworthy. Let's see if this is it. No, that's not it. Well, okay, suffice to say that at her, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton had a speech in Cleveland yesterday, and it was pretty good stump speech. The right wing are all butt hurt right now because, among other things, she said that, she compared all the people who are out there, all, you know, right-wingers, Republicans, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalists, and the lot. She compared anti-abortion Republicans to terrorists. She said, now, extreme views on women, we expect that from some of the terrorist groups. We expect that from people who don't want to live in the modern world, but it's a little hard to take coming from Republicans who want to be the president of the United States. Interesting sentence, that. We expect, but it's a little hard to take. It's not unacceptable, mind you. It's a little hard to take. But the crowd went wild, and she said, we're going forward, we're not going back. And the butt hurt was immediate. Jeb Bush, who can't buy an extra digit in the polls right now, despite all of his money, said that Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton's priorities are totally wrong. She compared pro-life Americans to terrorists. Jeb, yeah. You know, we used to think you were the smart one. We're learning differently, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Because, Jebya, when your side tries to bomb abortion clinics, does bomb abortion clinics, women's reproductive health care centers, when your side terrorizes women trying to walk into those facilities, well, wait, what word did I just use? Terrorizes. Who terrorizes? A terrorist terrorizes. Right? Right. So, if the shoe, no, wait, when you're talking about bushes, shoes get thrown. They don't, it's not whether, nobody cares whether they fit. They just throw the shoes. Think Progress says, her comments Thursday present her strongest language yet on the topic. To wit, it's a little hard to take coming from Republicans who want to be the President of the United States. That's some strong language, I tell you what. I mean, when you've been told that something's hard to take, you know you've had a thorough you've had a thorough talking to. And don't you forget it, Buster. But then again, if she said anything more, the for-profit media would talk again about how shrill she is. And the nerve, really, calling them terrorists. They ain't got no diapers on their heads. No. They got aluminum foil on theirs to protect them against the Kenyan Muslim death rays that come in through their fillings in their teethuses. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard to take. I had audio, and I can't find the daggum link, because I thought it was kind of interesting, because something else happened during the Cleveland speech. Something that we have speculated upon in the past. And wondered about, wondered when it would happen. Namely, the Black Lives Matter activists showed up for the speech. And they chanted, and they called for her to disassociate herself from profiteering from the prison industrial complex. Yes, they did. And as they chanted, and as they called out, respectfully, from a very great distance, nowhere near the stage, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton said, I'll be happy to meet with you later, but right now I'm going to keep talking. And you know what those Black Lives Matter activists did? They rushed the stage. No, they didn't. They kept on chanting, and they got louder and louder and louder. No, they didn't. In a display of civil disobedience, they marched forward toward the Secret Service phalanx that guards Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, and demanded and rushed past them and got up to the stage and took the microphone away from her and began to excoriate the crowd. No, they didn't. What they did was they hushed. They hushed right up. Not a peep. So I guess they got their point across. I mean, if it's the most liberal candidate that a party has to offer, if it's the most progressive candidate that a party has to offer, by God, you've got to show him all the disrespect you can manifest on earth. And grab the microphone away and start screaming and carrying on and berating the audience. But if it's Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, when she says sit down and shut up, you best sit down and shut up. And they did. Otherwise, she might have told them it was a little hard to take. Well, I guess I'm being a little bit of a jerk there. But the irony was not lost on me. And the broad gap in approach was also not lost on me. And, you know, I guess the guy who's the front runner hasn't punched anybody in the face yet either. Yeah, maybe they were happy. Maybe she really did sit down and talk to them. Maybe they've learned that the tactic they pulled on Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders isn't particularly effective, that it alienated as many people as it might have encouraged or activized. I don't know. But there's that. But Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton did address the issue of this ongoing assault and campaign, if you will, duplicitous, mendacious, full of filth and falsehood that it is against Planned Parenthood. And I found this particular story interesting because just as the people who were murdered by Vester Flanagan were reporters for WDBJ, well, WDBJ was out there. I think I said something last night about there's not a lot of hard hitting news in local small market stuff. There usually isn't, but that doesn't mean that the people working there don't want to do real news. That it's not all happy talk and stories of the 50th anniversary of the Chamber of Commerce. There in Roanoke County, Virginia, the Old Dominion, the county supervisor is a nasty little right-winger by the name of Al Bedrosian. And Al Bedrosian, doesn't that sound a little terroristy? Al Bedrosian? Al Qaeda? I mean, Al Bundy? Never mind. Al Bedrosian is a nasty little right-winger who has been on a personal crusade against Planned Parenthood because, of course, he's all concerned about the precious unborn little fetuses. Right. And he believes that the Planned Parenthood videos are the gospel truth. He wouldn't know a blunt cut edit in a video if it was marked blunt cut edit in the video. And so this little crusade that Al Bedrosian's been on has been to defund the United Way of Roanoke County. Because the United Way, which is sort of, yeah, I mean, you know how the United Way works. It puts its happy face forward with a lot of, they try to pick NFL players who haven't been convicted of beating the daylights out of their spouses or shooting anybody at a strip joint or anything like that. And they show the NFL player going to the schools and helping little Timmy learn to run a crossing route and not be afraid of the 250-pound linebacker who's about to knock him senseless. That kind of thing. Yeah, happy face stuff. And the United Way works in communities, and they gather in a lot of money, and then they filter little bits of money out to various and sundry agencies. And one of the NGOs that got money from the United Way of Roanoke Valley was, of course, Planned Parenthood. Now bear in mind, the United Way didn't use any money to make to provide any abortions of any precious little fetuses. No, they provided money to Planned Parenthood to fund non-abortive education. You know, things like how to screen oneself for lumps in one's breast. Things to pay attention to that might mean cervical or uterine cancer. Prostate cancer for guys, even. Non-abortive educational procedures. But that ain't enough for Al Bedrosian, hero of the fetuses. No. He was standing out in front of the county administration building when he said, "Let's make everybody happy. Those that want to support Planned Parenthood, go for it. Do it. We'll continue to pray on our side that we get out of this business of killing babies. But you can do it if you want. That's freedom in America. But to actually enhance, facilitate, or enable it through county government is where I have a problem." That didn't sit too well with a woman by the name of Leanne Woods. And nor should it sit well with most anybody with a conscience or, God knows, a working brain. Because the last I checked, he may be the county administrator, but he is not the maximum dictator for life of Roanoke County, Al Bedrosian. Now, bear in mind, Al Bedrosian is, of course, a liar. I mean, it goes with the turf. He's a Republican. He's pro-family values. Right? And somewhere there's a hooker waiting for him to snort meth off his or her bottom. But never mind. He's a liar because, see, Roanoke County doesn't even give any money to the United Way or Planned Parenthood whatsoever. But if you work for Roanoke County, you can check a little box that says give 25 cents out of every paycheck to the United Way in my name. And that's how the United Way works. And so even though it has nothing to do with abortion or anything along those lines, Al Bedrosian, in the name of the little fetuses, wants people to stop being able to check off that box to the United Way, even though the United Way gives money to people who feed hungry people like his Jesus wanted them to do. And he's a smarmy little puke, Al Bedrosian. You can be in the business of killing babies. You can do that if you want. That's freedom in America. Oh, for crying out loud. You kill the babies. We're above it. We'll pray. Well, go ahead, Al Bedrosian, and pray. But leave the United Way alone. But as I said, enter Leanne Woods. And WDBJ was still doing their job, despite what happened a couple of mornings ago. WDBJ had the cameras rolling when she said, "You have a problem because they perform abortions. Look at everything else they do. They save lives. It's more than birth control. It's more than abortion. They save lives." And that is when she took her shirt off. Back at the podium where Al Bedrosian was pontificating, standing back behind him was a pasty-faced, doughy white fella in a big old Hawaiian print shirt, and another pasty-faced, doughy white fella who was smaller than him, with a neon high visibility green piece of poster board that said "PP sells baby parts." I think PP stands for Planned Parenthood. That's what it says. PP sells baby parts. Parts is parts. Aye. Well, just to give them a shot let's see how the WDBJ folks are at hard journalism, shall we? Let's. As quick as the ad's over. And necessarily, since we're dealing with a bunch of fundies, Roanoke County's been getting emails, according to their city manager, Chris Morrill, and Planned Parenthood is doing the work of Satan. Yeah. They don't even think before they send these emails, do they? No, they don't. Really, they don't.
Supervisor wants the county to stop giving any money to the United Way or any other nonprofit organizations.
Holland Supervisor Al Bedrosian held a news conference today because he said he wanted to let people know where their money's going if they support the United Way.
WDBJ7's Noel Saunders spoke with Bedrosian and others.
Al Bedrosian says the United Way gives financial support to Planned Parenthood, and that money is helping pay for abortions. But one woman shows she strongly disagreed. She even took off her top just to show how much.
I think what we've done is we're okay with killing. That's what we've come to now.
Roanoke County Supervisor Al Bedrosian addressed a small group of people. Not everyone there was in support of his views.
They have a problem because they perform abortions. Look at everything else they do. They save lives.
Leanne Woods is a former Planned Parenthood employee and cancer survivor. She said screenings made possible in part by the organization saved her life.
When my lump was felt, it was like, boom, let's go. I knew what it was. I knew something was there and needed to be checked out.
Bedrosian says he's been against giving county money to any nonprofit since he took office 2 years ago.
Even if Planned Parenthood, whatever business they were in, we shouldn't facilitate it. I think it's a little heightened now because of what they do, abortions, which I'm totally against. But again, I always vote zero on all of them.
Feta DeVries is the CEO of United Way. She says the organization funds Planned Parenthood education, and she wants to make one thing clear.
We do not fund abortion. We do fund a very successful Abstinence Plus education program.
Oh, for pity's sake, really? Abstinence Plus education? Hey, kid, don't do it. Here's some condoms. But Leanne Woods did something heroic. Kind of weird, I know, that we would have to view in 2015 the act of a woman removing her shirt as a heroic act, but you realize she could be prosecuted. Because the naked female breast is evil. And fortunately, the camera angle at which WDBJ was videoing this, they only saw her back. Take a moment to consider that had she turned around full frontal to the camera and had that video gone out live to the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, fundamentalist evangelicals of Roanoke County and parts elsewhere, that WDBJ, reeling in grief, could have had handed to it a $475,000 fine for showing demon-possessed
female breastesses.
Because we got freedom. We got freedom to buy all the guns we want. We got freedom for pasty-faced, doughy white men who will never have to know the process that accompanies choosing whether to carry or abort a pregnancy. They got the freedom to sit there and tell women what they ought to do with their bodies. Women have a constitutional right, of course, to make those decisions for themselves. A constitutional right, just like the right to keep and arm bears. Only not as much, since the white men decided, since the white men and lots of other different colors of men have decided they shouldn't have it. But she does not have the right to take her shirt off in public. I'm surprised Al Bedrosian wasn't overcome by his upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing heterosexuality, and just a jumped on her. And there he was, a-rutting on my Mayella. Maybe she didn't get arrested because she doesn't have any breastesses. Because they were removed. Because they had cancer. That Planned Parenthood helped her discover. And thus, she was alive to remove her shirt instead of being dead in a casket somewhere with a pair of deadly breasts. She made Al Bedrosian look at the scars. Maybe. But this gives rise to a larger issue, one of women's rights first and foremost, and why it is that the right wing can't come to grips with it. You know, over here on the left, I mean, we were talking about another mass shooting in the United States on Wednesday evening, and the first thing that came out of the conversation was, hey, they won. It's going to happen. It's going to happen again and again and again and again and again. And there's not a damn thing we can do about it because it's a constitutional right enshrined in the Constitution. And Jesus. But the other side isn't all lily-livered like us. A woman's right to control the reproductive workings of her body is as constitutional as the right to have lots of guns is. But the right wing in America, godforsaken fascists that they are, they don't care. They're going to control it. By God, they're going to get control back of women no matter what. Whatever it takes. By any means necessary, right? Even if Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton says we will not go back. Well, that just inflames their passions over on the right wing. She called me a terrorist. Andy, she called me a creature. And I suppose, had she turned full frontal to the camera, we would now be having a great First Amendment debate as to whether or not the Federal Communications Commission has a duty to protect the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist citizens of Roanoke County and points elsewhere from seeing scars and where breasts used to be. And what about the children? And maybe they're imagining breasts. And there's a sociocultural aspect to this. I think we can ask a question. And I think it's probably a valid question. Golly, I wish Dr. John was listening live right now. I'd love to have his input on this. Do did pre-sedentary, pre-agricultural hunter-gatherer cultures, were they obsessed with women's breasts too, or were women's breasts simply the functional things that they actually are? You know, there for purposes of nourishing a newborn, just like all the other mammals have of one form or another. I mean, there, you know, there really is. There's a question here. Is it the breast, or is it the nipple? Because if it's the nipple, then men have those, and we run around with our shirts off all the time, even if we oughtn't. So it can't be. Can't be the nipple. But then again, Janet Jackson just about caused the entire culture to collapse because of the nipple of doom. And of all the people to address the issue, of all the people, And under, you know, where and when did the sexualization of the female breast happen? Does it happen in hunter-gatherer societies with the development of clothing? And is clothing was the invention of clothing more than simply utilitarian efforts to hold back the elements or protect the human body from the elements? At what point do aesthetics enter the conversation, consideration? Now granted, if you want to thumb through the dirtiest book ever written in the world, I'm not talking about the Kama Sutra, I'm talking about the Bible, you can find somebody in the Old Testament, obviously male, waxing rhapsodic about, thy lovely breasts are as yummy as the hills of Gilead, or some such Neolithic drivel. I honest to God, don't know. I mean, we know the bra was invented in the early 20th century, but before that, the breasts had been squeezed and flattened and held up and lifted and separated by various and sundry devices. The corsetry of the Elizabethan era actually probably shortened lifespans. My poor grandmother wore a corset almost to the end of her days. You know, whale bones and laces and all of that. Because a female just wasn't, she also, as I've mentioned before, never ever wore a single pair of pants. Didn't wear two pairs of pants either, in case there's any linguistic lack of clarity there. And that was all because it was culturally foisted upon her. But of all the people to raise it, this issue, a hillbilly. Oh, you might not think of her as a hillbilly, and I'm sure the right wing thinks that she's quite the little harlot. I'm kind of ambivalent. But of all the people, Miley Cyrus. Last night on Jimmy Kimmel's program, Miley Cyrus walked out with a pair of pasties over her nipples, in the shape of a heart, of course, and a cape with a lot of glitter and sparkly stuff and hearts and moons and stars on it, and a matching waist-to-floor-length skirt and the cape thingy actually covered up her breasts, but she made a point of flashing them, pasties intact, nipple covers. Modesty protection. And that, you know, this isn't some sort of an argument for let's all go nude. I will happily save the world from that shock and horror from my part. But body shame and body shaming has to go hand in glove with a whole hell of a lot of the misogyny and the prurient false modesty that we foist onto half of the population of this planet. Babies don't know body shame. Oh, okay, that's interesting. Arthur from the chat room pointing out, female human breasts do have a sexual purpose as well. Humans are the only mammals with permanently enlarged breasts, human females. Well, I don't know, some human males. Chimps' breasts swell only when they're nursing. The human breast has evolved to look like a buttocks, according to the documentaries I've seen. I've seen that, too, that the cleft and the... Oh, dear, because we don't have a biological signal telling us it's time to copulate. Within the context of this discussion, Tim from L.A. says, what happened to the 14th Amendment? Virginia Code Section 18.2.387 defines indecent exposure as intentionally making an obscene display or exposure of your body or private parts in public or in a place where other people are present. The crime also includes getting another person to expose him or herself. In essence, a public place or place where others are present means any place where you can reasonably foresee that someone who doesn't consent to seeing your private parts might witness your exposure. Indecent exposure might include exposing your breasts, buttocks, or genitalia in public. It also may include having sex in a public place where someone might witness. It's a Class 1 misdemeanor, punishable by up to 12 months in the sneezer, up to a $2,500 maximum fine. That's a hell of a lot less than you pay if you broadcast one, Tim. I mean, don't tempt them. The statute specifically excludes breastfeeding a child in public from the definition of indecent exposure. Tim says, notice they don't say which sex, so with the male fundamentalist going topless, they're actually committing a crime. Well, maybe. And yes, Steve. Steve says, breast or nipple? What the, really? Are the baggers really in a state of perpetual third grade? I was thinking it's more like perpetual seventh grade. Steve also says, I'm full on for Bernie, but I'd almost vote for Secretary Clinton just to see the collective explosion of all the teabagger hades. It's going to be a mess. It's going to be a mess. But of all the people to address the issue, Miley Cyrus. And I guess she could get away with it because it's late night television and the children should be asleep by now. Yeah, right. So Jimmy Kimmel kind of good-naturedly embarrassed himself, saying he's having a hard time figuring out how to talk to her. And she says, no, you look up here. Right. Let's check in.
This way, but I did the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with Joan Jett. I inducted her, and I was there, and we were talking to Paul McCartney, and I saw him not knowing how to talk to me, which I don't know really how to talk to Paul McCartney, so it was made me very comfortable because it made him more uncomfortable. And so sometimes it kind of is like a nice, like, convo icebreaker, you know?
It's definitely
like
an icebreaker.
You can just be like, stop staring at my tits, and then, like, the convo just kind of keeps going.
I see.
And,
yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
not usually.
Yeah, just if you keep your arms at your side, it would be better, probably.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because if I was watching, you know, if I, you and I were talking, I'd probably be trying to get a look. But since we're right.
Having a good conversation.
Yes.
Is what you're thinking about. That's what they're always thinking about.
Yeah. It's, yeah. But it's human nature is what it is. There's no two ways around
it. You know
it.
What I've learned, actually, is that it's not a, the tit. Are you allowed to say tit on
no.
your show? Boob. I hate the word boob.
I think you
it's
are,
like
actually.
It's like panty. It's like the creepiest.
Well,
anyway,
you could say breast.
Breast.
Yes, yes. The human breast.
The humans aren't afraid of the human breast. It's the nipple that's the issue. That I'm always so concerned. Like, I'm showing my boobs and no one has a problem, but the nipples are covered, so somehow that's okay. So America's actually fine with tits. It's nipples they don't like.
You're right.
See, I'm not so sure I agree with her, but, you know, bless her little heart for contributing to the dialogue. Such a dialogue. And as vacuous as it may seem, what Miley Cyrus did on Jimmy Kimmel, I don't know, maybe in another 150 years, if there's still a United States, maybe we'll get over some of this foolishness. Maybe, hopefully, kinda, sorta. Or does everybody just go, huh, silly, there's not going to be a United States in 150 years. Or maybe because, well, it all comes with the patriarchy, doesn't it? I mean, that's it's not a flaw, it's a feature. It's baked in. I don't know. So here we are, 6 minutes past the hour. It's about time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for the evening. And you're welcome. You're welcome to participate. You know, as Barbie points out, guns are okay in America. Two fried eggs, not okay. What a country, eh? Yeah. So the stress line is open for folks who don't have access to Skype or can't use it or can't figure it out or whatever, or have technical issues, 304-663-4676. Apart from that, though, the Horn Molloy Skype chat group is the best way to participate in Friday on the Front Porch. Yeah, wander on up, grab that jug over there with the corn cob stopper in it, and get yourself a good 140-proof swaller if you want. There's some ice-cold well water over there to chase it with, cool lemonade, sweet tea, what have you. If you'd like to help us keep this all on the air and keep it all going as we have been for years now, your help is most decidedly appreciated. We've got $180 to raise tonight. We've got a total of $380 to raise for the remainder of August. Goodbye, August. And so far we are at, well, we're at zero. Hopefully that will change. Take a break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. You don't just get a perfect bumper like that every day. So when the opportunity arises, the Scissor Sisters from several years back and Tits on the Radio. This is the Horn for Friday on the Front Porch, the 28th day of August, 2015. Big thanks going out to our dear friend Cindy in the Great Northwest. We now have $80 more to raise for the evening and $280 to finish out the month of August. Let's run over to the Skype channel and say good evening to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hi, Bob.
What's happening?
Not much. Just sitting around this afternoon waiting for the stepson and daughter to come tomorrow.
At which point you will turn over the rental unit to them.
Yeah, they'll go Sunday, and then I'll be dog sitting and cat sitting.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, the dog's pretty nice.
Yeah.
The cat just loves it here because it's a bigger house.
Yeah, and probably lots of fun stuff to explore. Well, we've got a good group this evening, and a little bird tells me that Barbie there in Iowa way, Stan, is under a flood watch, Barbie?
Yep. Gotcha.
Oh, dear.
I'm here.
Yeah, so, I mean, you were in the big nasty a few years back. Is this anything like that?
Oh, it's coming down like 2 inches an hour. And the Cedar River, there's a tributary into it that runs 2 miles behind the house. So that's, and when I walk out into the yard with little Mr. Asa, my feet go squish, squish, squish.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah.
Well, are the authorities taking precautions, or is the river rising?
Well, it must be if they put out the warning, and they put it out specifically, LaPorte City's in it. So they've done a lot of mitigating and stuff around here, so it's like, you never know what's going to happen. They've redone highways and stuff, and you just don't know.
But anyone who's ever been through something like that knows that, well, once you've been through it once, you never quite feel safe again, do you?
No. I hate it when it rains. And we just got done fixing the roof because sometime in the last month, we got a downpour, and my closet took the brunt of it, so I had to wash clothes and wash clothes and wash clothes and sop up water in my closet. But we found it, got it fixed, so I still have more laundry, but it's not going to matter if if I get water in the basement.
Oh, is that Mr. Asa?
He's saying hello to you.
Oh. Well, so, what do you, I mean, I'm displaying my lack of my geographic ignorance, but I'm guessing there's just not a whole lot of high ground there?
No. And it had never flooded, but once it did, of course, now we're added to the floodplain, and they did all this work, you know, around us, and so you don't know what to expect. It doesn't matter what time of the day or night it rains. I have to get up and look.
There's a similar phenomenon that happens here near where the giant sludge dams are. People, you know, if we have heavy rains for days on end, people begin to worry about the dams getting overtopped. And yeah, that's a bad, bad, bad thing around here. But
well,
lucky for us all. I mean, this is bad enough, but lucky for us all, Barbie, there's no climate change.
Yeah, right. Hi, that's what they keep saying. Now ask me if I believe it.
No, you're among the people who have brains. Of course you know there's climate change.
You're going to believe your lying eyes or what, Barbie?
Well, you know, we started out dry this summer. We were below precipitation, and we have a farmer out here that's already ready to, I bet you here in another week or so, he pulls the corn in. If it's dry enough to get out there, he was just out there this last weekend. But I'm telling you, it just doesn't look good. It's just pouring.
Well, you know, maybe Ted Cruz and, I mean, it's Iowa after all, and they're probably out there. Maybe Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee can pray the rain away. Maybe they can they can implore the Almighty to send it to somebody that needs it. No, wait a minute. The last time they prayed for rain in Texas, they got flooded.
I'd like them to get their little boots on and come on out here and see.
No, fact of the matter is you'd like them to get their little boots on and get the hell out of Iowa, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And that idiot, T-Rump, I wish he'd stay out. Him and his helicopter rides.
Well, it's kind of like your sister said, you know, don't be jealous. Elect him president, and we'll all get taken for a ride.
But you know what, our friend Bernie, his numbers are up no matter where he goes, and he doesn't have to advertise.
Well, you know, it was interesting. Charles Blow in the New York Times today had, I think it was today, but I know, he wrote a column saying back in 2009 he refused to ever mention, he declared that he would never ever mention Godzilla from Wasilla's name again. And he said, I've only done it twice, and today is the second time.
Isn't there an interview coming up?
Well, he said that he's going to apply the same thing to T-Rump, that he will not mention his name again in a column, because all he is, and what it was an indictment of media, saying, you know, T-Rump is awful enough, but the media are creating him. The Republicans created the climate that gives us a monster like Trump, and then the media just feed him. And I think there's a lot of validity to that.
The last I heard, the Des Moines Register was not looking his direction at all. And I don't see a lot of advertisements when he comes to town until 2 days before he shows up.
Well, the other day when T-Rump had Jorge Ramos of Univision hauled out of the press conference, the Des Moines Register pointed out that they too had been excluded. So
now that does not surprise me.
Well, what T-Rump. is the Des Moines Register some sort of bastion of liberalism?
It always has been, but I'm telling you, the last election, I was beginning to wonder, and I read something not too long ago in it that they weren't going that direction, which shocked me because they've always been liberal, as far as I know.
Well, is Des Moines to Iowa what Madison is to Wisconsin and Austin is to Texas? You know, a little
yes.
liberal haven.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to be kind of our ears, well, I don't think ears on the ground is quite the right phrase, but as we proceed toward the caucuses, you will be a trusted and valued resource there, Barbie. I mean, do you go and caucus at caucusing time?
I have once. But, you know, with work and now, you know, my present state of health, I hardly get out at all, except to vote. A doctor.
But that's a different thing. See, living in a primary state where you just go and you cast your primary ballot and you go home, I've always thought that the caucusing thing sounded kind of fun.
It is. The one I was at, it was fun.
I mean, it's fun. It's fun if you're a politics junkie.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't become that until I got closer towards the end of my work years. Then it got more fun because I had time.
Well, it's a little bit more limited on the Democratic side, but God, I can only imagine what it must be to go a caucus in Iowa with all of the goons over there on the Republican side. There's probably every brand of psychosis, neurosis, anything even remotely diagnosable psychologically and psychiatrically is probably on display in a Republican caucusing area.
Bob, that's all I think I'm going to see here this year.
You know, people wearing hats with tea bags hanging off of them, and American flags as far as you can see, and people. What's your firearm carry status there? Can you open carry your Freedom Protector to your Republican caucus there in Iowa, Stan?
Not unless you have a permit for it.
Well, see, that's why. See, then y'all don't have freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I feel pretty free here without mine.
No, you're just deluding yourself, Barbie. You're living under the autocratic boot heel of the Kenyan Muslim, you slurper. And if you did, if you loved freedom, you'd have eight or 900 guns right there within easy reach, because freedom.
Not me. Number one, I've always been afraid of them, Bob, because they've done nothing, but that's all you read about, and it gets worse, and it gets worse, and it gets worse every year, and nothing gets done, and nobody, I mean, you get people fighting it, and then you get them all riled up, and you're not taking our guns away, and it's just a vicious circle.
Sounds like.
And I've actually had Facebook friends, you know, we've deleted each other because of it.
Well, I just can't imagine out there in the wide open spaces really needing, say, a 17-round Glock 45 caliber pistol to take down the occasional prairie dog or rabid possum or whatnot.
Shootings are up in both. I don't know if you know how big Cedar Rapids, Waterloo is. And I don't know anything about Des Moines because I don't get the news, the newspaper from there anymore. But there's been a lot of shootings. And I can't even tell you, I can't remember the percentage that they're up. But it's scary.
Oh, it's terrifying. Freedom got protected again today in Georgia, Stan, Barbie. Christopher Starks, a college junior from Atlanta, it was Thursday evening at the University Student Union when he got Second Amendmented, and he was taken to a local hospital and died there later. And bear in mind, of course, this was on a college campus, because we got to, and of course, it's worth noting that Savannah State University is a historically black institution of higher learning in Georgia.
Wow.
And there were no arrests. And it's just kind of some vague language.
Nobody saw anything?
Was shot during an altercation late on Thursday. That's what the story says.
An altercation.
God only knows what that means.
Wow.
And I mean, this is a story from Reuters, so you'd think that. But you know, America. Guns in schools, guns in hospitals, guns in grocery stores. Guns in furniture showrooms, guns at car lots, guns Guns, yeah. Guns, 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 because freedom.
They carp on that, but yet they haven't figured out how to control the dispersion of them, because they give them to anybody.
Hey, you got a pulse? You want a gun?
Yeah. And that's scary to me.
And the paranoia is just overwhelming. Now, out in North Dakota, the police have issued an apology to a pair of college students they nearly killed.
Wow.
The Grand Forks Herald had the story. A pair of students, Levi Jorenstad and Colin Waldera, were setting up a telescope Monday evening after dark, because that's when telescopes are really helpful for looking at the sky.
Yeah.
and they were setting up their telescope to take pictures of the moon, because the moon has been waxing toward full.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the law shows up, blinds them with a bright light, tells them, "Don't move!" And the kids thought they were being pranked, and they kept digging around in their bags. And then the cops said, "No, we said don't move. We will kill you." Jorenstad said, "I was kind of fumbling around with my stuff, and my roommate and I were kind of talking. We were kind of wondering what the heck's going on. This is pretty dumb that these guys are doing this." And then they started shouting to quit moving or we could be shot. So at that moment, we kind of look at each other and we're thinking we better take this seriously. And the cops were scared because they thought that the sweater that Levi Jorenstad was wearing was a tactical vest.
Oh.
And then they realized it wasn't a gun, but a telescope. And by way of apology, the police said the students were never in any danger, and the officers felt that they were possibly threatened, and when an officer is threatened, better safe than sorry.
I wonder if anybody gets to do anything normal anymore.
No, because we are petrified. We're terrified in this country. You know what saved Levi Jorenstad and Colin Waldera?
No.
Their white skin. Because if that had been a couple of black guys, the cops would be hollering to this moment. That was a firearm shaped telescope, and they didn't respond to lawful orders to stand still and stop ruffling through their ghetto bags. So we were forced to justifiably homicide them.
We felt threatened. Yep.
Better safe than sorry.
Wow. I guess I just don't understand why they don't identify themselves and they just walk up and say, "Hold it." Because they don't always identify themselves. And I think that's why a lot of the shootings are occurring here.
You mean the police?
Because it's more the police than it is the sheriff here. It's the police that are awful ugly with people, and black people of color more than our white counterparts. Because of the side of the town that it's on too, geographically. I mean, they just have so many things against them. And it's like, I'm trying to think of how many deaths there's been so far this year, but it's like two or three a month. That's a lot.
In Iowa, that's an epidemic, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Waterloo is 80,000 and Cedar Rapids, who's had more, and they're probably, I don't know, twice the size, maybe.
Well, this is what comes of having a country that has become scared of its own shadow.
And you can't get people to stand up because they get beat down by the right. And they're ugly when they beat you down.
Because they're fascists.
Oh, the worst. I had someone calling me the most awful, ugly, nasty, vicious, vile names the other night on Facebook. Because I was just asking a question in response to a question.
Oh, you got
to
call out the troops when that happens. Your sister and I love to play with those kind of people.
Oh. But before she blocked me, she called, which made me laugh. She said, "Your picture makes you look like a 50-year-old woman." Bob, I am 50 years old. I'm 59.
Well, yeah, that was a compliment, right?
That was the ultimate compliment.
It's like getting carded when you're 50.
Yeah. Sir,
could I see your ID for that alcohol, please?
I just loved it.
Yeah.
So being blocked by her was nothing. And I'm trying to think of the exact word she said. You old lady moron. And I thought, if that's the best you can come up with.
Well, I guess you felt like you'd had a good talking to, didn't you?
Oh, boy, she really shamed me.
Well, I sure hope it's just rain you're dealing with and nothing worse. God almighty. So the Cedar River flows into what, the Mississippi?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's been down, we've gotten rainfalls like this before, and it's always bypassed me here. Waterloo's got it bad, but where you get, 2 inches an hour for 6-8 hours, and we've never been in it. And when I heard that alarm today, and of course it just blares like a trumpet over the TV and your phone and your...
Oh, you mean the... Only
it's longer. It's not an one. It's a longer. And when you see the exclamation...
Oh, it's, you mean it's the... No, we really mean it alarm.
That's the we really mean it alarm.
God.
Sorry?
Isn't it called the emergency alert system on TV?
Well, it's normally the emergency alert does it, but and they did it probably this time, but it's a different tone when it's a warning.
It comes through your cell phone, right, Barbie?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's sort of like the Amber Alert. We get that when, like, people have been abducted,
yes,
and so forth. Children have been abducted and...
Yeah, same one. Yep.
Way or whatever, yeah. Okay.
It's reverse 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Barbie mentioned Waterloo, Iowa. Waterloo will forever live in my memory now because of the 2012 presidential campaign. I remember when 1L Michelle Bachmann went there and said, "I'm so proud to be in Waterloo, Iowa, the birthplace of one of America's great heroes, John Wayne." When it was actually John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, my God. I got to tell you. Because you brought her up. My husband, when the Michelle Bachmann came to town, he got this big old sign he painted, "Michelle Bachmann sucks," and took it right out into the crowd and held it up. And then he got escorted to the corner.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that didn't take long.
No, but I was proud of him.
Of course, you could always go with a sign that says, "Michelle Bachmann eats corn dogs."
Yeah. Yep. I'm waiting for his next, what he's going to do next, because it's going to be something big if this keeps continuing like it is. You know, that big train that all them idiots are getting on?
Yeah, the clown arc?
Yeah. It's getting bigger and bigger, let me tell you. He's always up for those challenges.
Well, a man needs a hobby.
Oh, that's his hobby, that is. Create pandemonium.
Golly.
And every once in a while, I get really proud of him when he does it.
Now, see, that only encourages him, Barbie.
Yep.
But maybe that's the point.
Yep.
Well, we've got a good group gathered this evening for Friday on the front porch. In addition to Barbie and to Sparky, there's Rick. Rick, how's so? Did you get over your massive year-end billing crisis?
No, my crisis is still ongoing. It's I calculated as of a couple of days ago, I had to bill an average of 14.1 hours a day for the next, like, 16 days. And so that's why I put down on the Skype that I'll probably be on the back porch tonight, meaning that I won't be, you know, participating quite as much as usual, but I'll be listening to everybody at least.
Wow. That reminds me of the joke about the young lawyer who dies and goes up to face judgment at the pearly gates.
Yeah.
And he's complaining because, you know, he was, you know, 29 years old. And he gets up to St. Peter and he says, St. Peter, I mean, I can't possibly be here. I was too young to go. I'm only 29. And St. Peter licks his thumb and flips through the book of life. And he goes, no, here, according to your billable hours, you're 197.
That's great. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really crazy. I mean, I have to, you know, I'm dating a lady and, you know, all I can do is call her and text her occasionally, you know, so, you know, just sort of have to, at least she's understanding. And,
well, just tell him, just tell her you're working on the Cunningham's entailment and you'll bring her a bag of hickory nuts real soon.
Oh, there you go. So what I basically have to do is I have to calculate, okay, I have, okay, to get 14 hours, to bill 14 hours, I realistically have to be working about 17 at the least, okay? So then I have to figure out, okay, I got 7
hours.
Yeah,
with a catheter.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I get 4 hours of sleep, and that leaves 3 hours, and then an hour and a half to drive to and from work, that leaves an hour and a half, and then a half an hour to shower, and that leaves an hour, and I'm not really sure, you know, whether I have that hour or not, you know? So it's crazy. It's no way to live. You know, I'm not. I got myself into this situation, and you know, I mean, I missed my 35th year reunion last weekend because I had to do billables. I think I might have mentioned to you, and so I'll be damned if I'm going to, you know, not get my bonus after having missed that reunion. You know.
Well, no kidding. But by the same token, you just got to get a little more creative, Rick.
Turn your phone's
recorder function on when you go to the shower. You know, the one that you get a half hour for.
Right.
And dictate to your phone from the shower.
Oh, there you go.
Therefore, you get a billable shower instead of a billable hour.
Well, it doesn't take me half an hour to shower, but I'm obviously getting dressed and ready and stuff. Yeah, so.
Keep talking. Wow. Keep talking. Tie in the tie, be talking. Button in the shirt, be talking. Socks on, talking.
There you go. Okay. Well, maybe I can at least talk to my cats. I wonder if I could bill that. I don't think so, for some reason.
I don't know. Maybe. Okay. Everybody PayPal Rick a penny.
Oh, jeez.
Then we'll all be clients, and you can bill us.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, but I can't sign the retainer agreement. My boss has to.
There's always somebody there ruining things.
I know, I tell you. So everybody hold on to your change, except if you want to contribute to Bob and give him some loose change, you know. You know, fractional money is accepted.
Exactly. Fractional money. It's still, to use lawyer talk, fungible and liquid.
Yeah, yeah. But as far as the billable hours thing, there's kind of a euphemism out there called value billing, where you basically bill somebody, you know, for however many hours you think you benefited them, as far as for, you know, doing a specific task. And, you know, you get that when you have these lawyers like flying across the country and they're like working on more than one client's case at a time. A colleague here told me of a case of a New York lawyer who once billed like, I think, I don't know, like 25 or 26 hours in a 24-hour period by doing that. Because you basically bill somebody for the travel on the plane, okay, and then you can work on another client's case while you're on the plane, and it's all legitimate.
Well, sure, because lawyers wrote the rules.
It's
a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to come after you, you know?
Portal-to-portal portal-to-portal billing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so let's say you're flying...
The highfalutin plaintiff's lawyers that I used to know, I mean, if you have to fly from Charleston to San Diego to do a deposition, you ain't staying in the Super 8.
No, you're definitely not staying in the Super 8. No. We actually flew from L.A. My boss and I flew from L.A. to New York to represent a client who was being looked at by the IRS for failing to disclose foreign bank accounts, and there's huge penalties that go with that. And she was looking, because the account had a high balance at one point of, I think, maybe $20 million,
yeah. You
know, she was looking at a penalty up to half of that. So we went to went to New York and actually dined at the fine restaurants, and I'm sure my boss wrote it off to her account, stayed at a nice hotel. I think it was at the hotel near Ground Zero. So I saw the construction of the Freedom Tower. That was ongoing at the time, a couple of years ago.
Well, Tim, I don't want to take you away from your billables, but Tim just asked a question saying, what the F is a billable hour? I Googled it, and it still don't make sense.
Oh, well, what is a billable hour? Well, at least as far as we're concerned, Tim, the way we do it is you divide the hour into fractions of, divide it by 10. And so you have 6-minute increments to get a 0.1. So every time you touch a client's file, you automatically get 0.1. Although I'm told that our firm has a minimum in its fee agreements, has a minimum billing for any given task or day of 0.2 hours. So, you know, so in our case, if you just, you know, send a reply to somebody's email, and it takes you like a minute or two, you basically get to bill like 12 minutes for that by the terms of the fee agreement.
And that in turn is a fraction of the per hour rate.
Right.
Yeah. You're charging, say, you know, $400 an hour.
Right.
And, that 12 minutes is $80.
Yeah. For me, my boss is billing me out now at, I think, $435 an hour for civil cases, criminal cases, $550 an hour. And so, you figure every...
Well, that beats the hell out of hickory nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. So every 6 minutes, if my civil rate, it's, you know, $43.50 an hour. So I joke with, you know, family members or whatever, when I'm on the phone with them at the office, I say, okay, we were on the phone for about an hour and 10 minutes. That'll cost you, $500 or whatever. So a billable hour just is really a function of charging clients for time that you spend working on their case.
And it goes back to what Abraham Lincoln said, a lawyer's stock in trade, a lawyer's time and advice are his stock in trade.
That is true. That is true.
Other people sell shoes. Some people sell guns. Lawyers sell time.
Yeah, and the man whose brain is on loan from God, of course, his stock and trade is excellence in broadcasting, right?
$50 million a year worth.
Yeah. And he's being paid by the propagandists of... some company that wants to have their agenda promoted, or companies.
I still think it's all quietly fronted under the table by people like the Heritage Foundation.
Okay.
You can't sell enough General Steel metal buildings to come up with $50 million a year for him and still have enough to pay the suits that prey on him.
I wonder if there's some money laundering going on there, Bob, if somebody other than the payor is paying, you know, surreptitiously paying, you know, Rush's salary.
Well, I mean, it's out there that early on in his career, that's exactly what was going on.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't stand listening to the guy. It sounds like every time, you know, he's so whiny, his voice. He's got a terrible voice for
radio. That's why I about ran off the road yesterday when he said everybody knew that Vester Flanagan was trouble. You know, everybody but the guy who sold him the gun, of course.
And it's Vester with a V, right?
Yeah, Vester.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody knew he was trouble.
Yeah.
But people who sell firearms are just innocent, apparently in this country, are innocent little naives who think that everyone has a sterling motive and an even more sterling character, because they can't possibly tell who might purchase a firearm and go use it to deadly and nefarious ends.
I mean, what could possibly go wrong when you give a mentally imbalanced person a handgun, right, Bob?
Well, who's the gun dealer to judge who's mentally imbalanced? I mean, you know, one guy's unbalanced is another guy's iconoclast. I mean, really?
Well, that's true. That's true. Or maybe everybody else is.
I mean, he walks in the door, he's talking to invisible Jehovah, and Jehovah's telling him to buy a gun and avenge the people from the victims from the Charleston massacre. And who's a gun dealer to say that Jehovah's not really there?
Well,
I mean, First Amendment, right?
Well, especially if the gun dealer is Bible-believing and a good Christian gunnamentalist, right?
Well, then he'd be violating his closely held religious beliefs, and if we can't make Hobby Lobby do that, we can't make an upstanding, God fearing, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist gun dealer do that, can we?
No, we certainly can't. I mean, you know, Hobby Lobby is entitled to their, you know, deductions for, you know, whatever they're doing. They're entitled to impose their beliefs on their employees, let's just say, because they have the money.
Right.
So what's wrong with that? You know?
Freedom.
Yeah, there you go.
America.
Yeah. I tell you, I don't know if you heard Mike. You probably didn't hear Mike Malloy, but I guess there was a, he was reading like the best of quotes from Trump through the years. It was published in an article on Politico, I think, of all places. And yeah. It was just hilarious. I don't know if you've read that or heard about it. Or
yeah, I read it. Almost spit take the monitor with yogurt this morning.
Oh, jeez. I mean, yeah, the wet razors, right? Yeah. So you going to your equipment fund? Changing the subject. You've completed that, Bob. Where are you on that?
Well. It's sort of completed.
Okay.
I set $4,500 as the goal. We've made it.
Good.
The original estimate on the two pieces of equipment was like close to $4,600. But I figured, you know, I'll just make it up with what. But we made it that far, and to the extent humanly possible, I'd like to push it up just to take care of a couple of other things, one of which is the badly needed repairs on the phone unit, and well, there's a couple other things here, not the least of which is some computer stuff.
Was that what caused the problems last night on the stress line, or was that a different issue?
No, that's a different issue entirely.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. I honest to God don't know what was going on there. There's such a proliferation of different phones across the country. Some people are crystal clear. Other people, not so much.
Right. Gotcha. Well, I'll tell you what, Bob, it's been nice talking. I'd probably better head to the back porch and just listen to you all.
We better figure out a way to make this billable.
I'm not so sure that there is a way. Let's see, what client matter is this? I guess I could bill it to administrative, but okay. But I don't
know. Vikes, I don't know.
I did have to spend...
No, this is continuing education.
Yeah, I did have to spend 12 minutes consulting with my boss today on whether to accept a case involving possible money laundering and an issue as to repatriation of funds back to the U.S. and internet pharmacy and all sorts of stuff, you know. And so I guess I could probably bill that to administratively, legitimately. Whether it gets counts as a billable hour, I don't know. But I'll take every tenth where I can find it, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, go and do good. Go and do good, Atticus.
Will do. Will do. And I am the real Atticus, not the... Well, no, I'm not... Well, the real Atticus turned out to be not such a nice guy. I'm the fictionalized one, let's say.
You're early Atticus, not... Not post Brown versus Board of Education, Atticus.
There you go. There you go. You got it. You got it. Well, have a great weekend, everybody. Okay, I'll just listen in, and I won't cut out yet, but I'll just listen in and keep billing here, okay?
All right, sounds good. Take care, Rick.
You bet.
Later, Doc.
All right, bye.
What's happening, Tim? I've heard you a couple of times along the way. I have some news for you.
Oh, I'm doing all right. Just hanging out, watching, keeping cool.
Do you recall a discussion a couple of weeks ago of the buckwheat soba noodles?
Yeah.
So I was at our little international grocery yesterday, and lo and behold, they had ready-made Zaru soba sauce. So this weekend, probably for lunch, like on Sunday, cold buckwheat soba, Zaru soba. I'm excited.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
during the summer.
Yeah, I got some. I got some seaweed to flake, and I've got my scallions, and I've got my daikon, and I'm ready to rock. Mm.
Ooh. I'm hungry. Can I come over?
Come on over. We'll make extra.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll make extra. Talk to your neighbors and see if you can bring some good salsa with you when you come. Though, hard to come by around here.
I should send you some peppers.
Oh, I tell you what. Well, you know, the threat is still out there. I haven't heard anything from him in a while. But Jay Cruzan said he was growing some brutal peppers. And there was going to be a Jay Cruzan Bob Kincaid chili pepper challenge. So, I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing I haven't heard any more from him on the idea. He may be listening now as we speak. I tell you what, though, my local, you know, I guess in what, Southern California, it's Ralph's, but around here it's Kroger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They've got an in-house brand called Private Selection. I picked up a jar of their New Mexico green chili salsa. Oh, it's very good. Very good. And I'm sure the people in New Mexico, you know, hi, Gary. Are going, that can't be, it's probably not worth a damn. And it's probably not, but for West Virginia, New Mexico, oh, it's got a nice fire to it and a nice tangy bite. And in point of fact, probably when the program's over, I'm going to go across the river and get a jar because I've been hankering for some for about 4 days now. I get on these kicks where I can take salsa straight out of the jar.
So what kind of chili do you use?
I presume they're New Mexico green chilies.
Like Serrano or...
No, I'm of the understanding that the New Mexico green chili is its own thing.
Hmm.
We may have to investigate.
Let's see what it looks like. Green chili. Fresh green chili, New Mexico. Images. Looks like habaneros. Serranos, I mean.
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, you see, I see some here and they're kind of lobey looking. They don't really look, a serrano is kind of small and straight or, you know.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, man.
Ooh, that looks good.
Yeah, there's a picture of some blackening on a grill, and wow.
Oh, yeah. Imagine putting that in your hamburgers.
Oh. No, in the past, when I've done it, what you do is you put them on the grill like that, and you let the skin blacken.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put them in a brown paper bag and let them sit for a little bit. And then when you run them under cold water, the skin comes off, and you're just left with the chili goodness, and that's what you make your salsa out of. Because I used to make a green chili. I'd put a pork shoulder on the smoker, and let it go low and slow over hickory coals for a long, 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 long time till it was just falling apart, and then make a salsa of green chilies, and onions and roasted tomatillos, and garlic. Salt, and put the meat with that, and serve it over like a nice arborio rice or something. Oh, special good.
Oh man, you're making me hungry.
I'm not doing myself any favors either. But I've had two straight days of dining on Indian heat and eat vegetarian food pouches. And boy, I tell you what, makes me happy.
God, that looks so good. I want to try it so bad right now.
Well, put it on the
I'm
list.
I'm sure it's pretty hot. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty hot.
And from Ralph's, too, huh?
I imagine they probably got the Private Selection brand in there. It's down. It's there. Well, God only knows what it's like.
Yeah, they do.
God only knows what it's like in Southern California. But you know, we've got a space in ours that's about half a shelf, four high, and it's that's your Hispanic foods.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it's Taco Bell brand and Pace and Old El Paso, but. Yeah, there's a few more esoteric ones. Out of Texas, there's a Mrs. Renfro's jalapeno salsa, and it'll peel paint.
Ooh. But jalapenos aren't that hot, though.
Oh, some are.
I've eaten a lot out here. But.
Well, maybe you'll have to go to Ralph's and see if they're carrying Mrs. Renfro's, too, and you can... You can get back in touch and just call me a big old hillbilly chili sissy.
Or just go to the local Mexican store, and just buy it there.
Well, there is that.
We have a lot of,
yeah. I miss out on a lot of the culture here. If it doesn't go well with beans and cornbread, it generally isn't happening around here.
No, I want to try Southern food. I really want to. I mean, I have Southwest food. I've eaten a lot. I want to try something really different.
Now, if you really want to live, what you want to you want? You ever eaten much Cajun?
No, I mean, I went to. I had hospital food, and they had gumbo, but I doubt that.
A real live, honest to God gumbo or a etouffee or a jambalaya, that kind of, pretty special. You know, up here it's mostly just beans and cornbread and fried things.
I mean, you got to have a specialty up in West Virginia.
I just told you, beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread. Well, I bet the cornbread's good.
Well, the cornbread is good. I mean, generally gets baked in an iron skillet that's about 140 Ooh. Years old. And that then you get good. you get into the larger question of sugar in the cornbread versus no sugar in the cornbread. I was raised on the no sugar in the cornbread theory, under the working idea that if God wanted cornbread to have sugar in it, he would have called it cake. But
there is no God.
No, but the further south you get, the more sugar you get in your cornbread.
I mean, the only cornbread that I got,
got his link from, who has cornbread? Like Church's Chicken or Popeyes.
At Popeyes, maybe. Oh, that, no, Popeyes is biscuits, aren't they?
Well, they had cornbread, too.
Okay. But, my particular favorite is to make up the batter and add in some chopped jalapenos and green chilies and onions and a can of that green giant so-called Mexican corn that's got little bits of bell pepper in it. And woo-wee, yeah, good.
Ooh.
Wow, we've gotten deep into the food porn, haven't we?
Oh, hell yeah. Where's Lottie at? He's the food porn king. Oh, God,
hey, Barbie, so do y'all sugar the cornbread?
She there?
I don't know. Maybe she muted out or she's gone away from the mic. But it depends on where you are. I mean, of course, fried green tomatoes. You know, we're big for that around here.
I'd never had that before.
Oh, they're yummy. You dust, you know, you slice them and dust them in cornmeal and pan fry them. Some people batter them and deep fry them, but you know, when they're pan fried and they just blacken up real nice, yummy.
I heard about it like on in the movie, but on TV, but I've never seen it, never eaten it. Man, I am deprived, aren't I?
Yeah, see, over in the chat room, Lottie says, God made honey for cornbread.
Hmm.
And then there's the thing, and it takes a couple of days to make it. I haven't baked it in a while. Entirely separate animal I've talked about it before called corn pone. Really heavy, really dense. You have to do your starter, and you have to let it ferment overnight. And then you mix all your other stuff into it and bake it. And it's much sweeter. And it's really, really thick and dense. And it keeps for a long time. If you keep like just a tea towel around it and keep it in the fridge or whatever. And you cut and after it's cold, it's wonderful when it comes out hot. But when it's cold, you cut slices off of it. And you pan fry it and serve it with a fried egg on top.
That sounds good.
Yeah. I grew up on it.
I just had buckwheat soba.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. See,
well, I'm gonna have that.
Yeah, that's gonna be a big treat for me come Sunday.
Oh, and put a piece of ice in the middle of the noodles. My mom doesn't. I don't know why.
I was gonna say, are there any special instructions so I don't screw it up?
Yeah, my mom usually puts it in like an ice to keep it cool. That's it. I mean, nothing special.
But I mean, do you cook it like spaghetti? You know, al dente or?
Yeah, you just boil the water, stick the noodles inside, and wait till it gets soft, and then dump the cold water in hot water, and then get the noodles. And my mom usually puts. She has a wicker type basket or whatever. I don't know what it's called in Japanese. Yeah. And she puts ice around it to keep it cool, and then get the chopstick, and you drop it inside the soup, and eat it.
I'm excited.
Oh, and get edamame, too, or what is it called, soybeans thing? Because that's what we usually eat it with. And I'll drink, like, iced green tea.
I want to go to dinner at Mama's house. Hey Roger, what's happening?
Well, we're so deep into food porn, I thought I'd give you an update.
Do please.
Yeah, well, I picked one about 2 days ago, weighed 18 and a half pounds, and I cut it open and harvested the seeds, and it's not really yet mature. But we took it into the house, and we baked it, and we ate it for dinner, and damn, it tastes like squash.
Son of a gun.
Yeah. I don't think it has any super special outstanding flavor or anything else. It's sort of like a butternut or an acorn. And we did it with olive oil and garlic and roasted it in the oven and ate it up. But my wife's attitude about it was that that one squash could probably feed 30 people.
Wow.
And she gave half of it away to the lady that helps out with my father-in-law. And we still have a baggie full of uncooked. And we've got another container full of already cooked. And they are, you know, I mean, it's just way more per squash than I can deal with. But I'm letting the rest of them go because I want to get more mature. I just worked on the seeds today that I dried, 256 seeds out of the squash, and I'll finish drying them, and then I'll do a germination test and see if I really screwed up and harvested it too early. But the other thing I'd like for anybody that's in the California area, there is a heirloom food expo that's going on in Santa Rosa. I believe the dates are September 8, 9, and 10. I got to check on that. Well, my wife just put her thumb up, so I guess I'm right. And this Heirloom Food Expo is an incredible thing. I've never been to one. All I've seen is the postings after it. But if you're anywhere in the neighborhood of Santa Rosa that you can get to, It's in the fairgrounds kind of number, and you can go to Baker Creek Seed or rareseeds.com or the Heirloom Expo or, you know, whatever. Do some Googling on it. And it's an incredible non-GMO heirloom seed exhibition of all kinds of veggies. I mean, all the different tomatoes, the different potatoes, all of this stuff. And
is there tasting?
I don't know. I've never been there. But I think they had 400 different varieties of tomatoes last year. It's just an amazing backyard gardener. If you have seeds from your grandparents and you've been growing them, then I mean, like the latest thing is that if you bring your own backyard produce to exhibit, you get in free. And so they're really pushing to show all this heirloom seed. And, you know, the federal government says we can't share seeds and all the rest of that. And everybody says, fuck them. You know, we're going to do it. And
why does the federal government say we can't share seeds?
Oh, it has to do with, they have to be rated as at a certain germination rate, and you know it's the big seed companies.
Oh, I was going to say, is the short answer because it pisses off Monsanto?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I mean, there's a whole lot of people that are violating federal law, and I'm one of them because you know I mean the seeds for my beans that Baker Creek is selling, well, I sell them to them, and then they sell them, and I'm happy with the money because I don't want to deal with a website that goes international. But the fellow in Spain,
Jim.
Yeah. I haven't talked to him about whether or not the seeds worked for him that I sent him. But I don't have the desire to become a seed company. So I made the choice that I'll sell the seeds for a little less to Baker Creek. They turn around, repackage them, put them in a little packet, and they put it on their website, and they sell them all over the world, and that's fine with me. But anyhow, I would really like to encourage folks to anybody that lives anywhere close to get to Sacramento, not Santa Rosa, September 8, 10, 11, I think it is, to go to it. Now, the other side of it is I went out and picked a bunch of beets today, and at the present time I think I've got 15 quarts and 30 pints of beets, and we've only gotten done with half of them.
Wow.
So
do you, tomorrow are you pickling or just canning?
Straight canning. I belong to a quasi-fraternal social organization, and we put on dinners, and when I do it, I serve a pork chop on a bed of sauerkraut, and then I do either Harvard beets, cauliflower, broccoli, green beans, whatever, and a salad, and I don't do the pork in my own garden, but virtually everything else I try to do out of my garden. And it's an $8 dinner, and the extra money gets donated to a K-12 school in out of Chicago area, and extra money goes to a senior center, residential community, assisted living type bullshit down in Florida. And if anybody else belongs to the organization, they'll know what organization I'm talking about, but I'm not pushing the organization. It's just, it's local, and so that's what I do.
Cool. Cool. Well, Lord knows, just the mention of 400 different kinds of tomatoes fills me with just joy. In fact, well, I was looking at Facebook earlier today, and somebody who's on my feed, I mean, there's like 3,000 people, but he put up this thing from some radio station, and, you know, radio stations are forever putting up photos going, is this a thing, or can you believe it? And it just said, I've got a friend down in Alabama that swears that this is a delicacy. Have y'all ever heard of it? And it was a tomato, a fresh tomato and mayonnaise sandwich.
Sounds great.
And whoever this guy was that was making fun of, he said, I can't believe anybody would eat that. Yeah, you know how we are. We progressives. We have a slightly superior streak. But my God, a fresh tomato and mayonnaise sandwich on good bread? You damn right.
Well, it depends on the tomato. If you're going down to your local Kroger, Safeway, Raley's, whatever, and getting those
little
cardboard
numbers. Yeah, those little Florida baseballs.
Yeah, that's not it. I mean, the other day I went into Farmer's Market, and one of my farmer friends that we've been bartering for a long time told me to show up at 2 o'clock because that was when he was closing down. And he gave me 14 boxes of tomatoes that they're so busy on the farm that they can't deal with. And I came home, and my wife and I, well, I think we did 16 quarts of chunked up tomatoes and 17 quarts of juice of this 14 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes.
Aw, damn.
And it is so tasty. And, I mean, the tomato juice, you think V8 tastes good? Bullshit. You're drinking toilet water compared to the tomato juice I made out of these guys.
Oh, I have no doubt. Yeah, that's probably magic.
And they were all, the ones that were still, quote, quasi-firm are the ones that went in the jars, and the ones that were kind of soft went into juice. And that tomato juice has a flavor like I've never gotten out of any number of tomato juice I've ever purchased. I mean, the acid content's high, the sugar content's high. It's just got excellent flavor.
Did you ever make tomato preserves, Roger?
No.
Oh, they're some kind of good, too. Usually flavored with a little bit of lemon peel and maybe a little bit of ginger. But you use tomatoes just like you'd use strawberries or apricots or whatever and make preserves out of them. And, oh, my goodness gracious. Long about freezing to death in February, that stuff will save a life.
Yeah, well, my preserves are raspberries and blackberries and red currants. I mean, jam, preserve jam kind of number, and jellies. And I just haven't got time. I mean, we've spent all day today working on the beets, and we've only processed half of them so far. And tomorrow or Sunday, we got to process all the Cuyahoga beets. And there's as many Cuyahoga beets as there was the reds and the yellows that we've done today.
What are the Cuyahogas? This I got to know.
Oh, Cuyahoga beets are a little bit milder on the beet flavor side, And I got into growing them because a restaurant I was selling to wanted them to put on salads. But if you take a Cuyahoga beet and you put the root on one side, the stalk on the other, and cut it right down the center and hold it up, it's red and white stripes looking like an archery target.
Oh, wow.
They're banded.
Oh, that's
and cool. Some of them, you end up with the white on the outside, and most of them are red on the outside. But they're a red-white striped, and they're not quite as strong in flavor. And both my wife and I really like the really strong beet flavor, so they're not part of our priority number. But when you turn them into Harvard beets or something like that, they're really good.
Oh, they sound neat. Now, never having
other people are going to go, what's Harvard beets? Harvard beets are a cornstarch, honey, vinegar sauce that's put on sliced beets. And so you get your sweet and sour with the beet flavor, and they're fantastic.
I'm a pickled beets kind of goon. I like a lot of clove in it.
Yeah, well, my wife's not into the pickled beets, so I don't make pickled beets anymore. I used to, but I don't anymore. But I'm also playing with the lemon cucumbers, and I found out that 15 pounds of lemon cucumbers, dried and garlic salted, dehydrates down into 1 pound of dried cucumber chips, which, you know, instead of eating potato chips, I eat cucumber chips. And anyhow, I'm just having a hell of a good time in my garden.
Oh, it sounds like it's been a good year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the production's good. What, dear? I've already turned it off. Sorry about that.
No worries. Let me check in real quick. Jay Cruzen, are you with us this evening?
Yeah, I just got home from work.
Wow,
can you hear me?
Yeah, good to see you. Good to hear you.
Okay. Yeah, you too. How have you been, Bob?
Hanging in, hanging on. I took your name in vain earlier. We were talking about the chili pepper challenge.
Yes, I heard that. The pepper plants are growing.
Oh, dear God, they're still growing?
Yeah.
I thought maybe I dodged a bullet. We should probably quit using that phrase.
You should stop using that. They were slow starters, but now a couple of them have sprung way up now. That one's about 2.5 feet tall.
Fruit on them?
No, nothing yet.
Well, but it's Florida. You've got a perpetual growing season there. I have a feeling.
Yeah, I'm not going to run out of time.
I have a feeling this cup is not going to pass me by.
What cup is that?
Well, it's a biblical reference. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
What about that storm that's about ready to hit Florida?
Oh, everybody's freaking out about it, but it's really nothing. It's nothing to me. It's just going to be a tropical storm, and as strong as maybe a one. I don't even think it's going to do that, but you know how everybody... It's like in the Carolinas when they say the word snow and everybody goes out to the grocery store and buys everything.
All the milk, bread, and eggs.
All the milk, bread, and eggs. It's all gone. And when you hear a hurricane, everybody goes out, the water, the lumber, and the ice.
Don't forget the ice.
OSB, water, lumber, water, OSB, ice.
And then everybody has French toast with the milk, bread, and eggs.
Yeah.
Jeez. But I mean, is it even Cat 1 at this point, Erica?
Well, she's interacting with land right now, so not right at this moment. I think it made it to Category 1.
But it's been a quiet season.
Yeah. It's been a busy storm season, though. I mean, regular thunderstorms. It's been crazy down here. Hence, I haven't been here. I've been working 16 hours almost every day.
Yeah, it doesn't help. I mean, I just looked it up as we were talking. It doesn't help that people like AccuWeather put up headlines like this one. Erica to lash Florida after delivering deadly blow to Caribbean.
It barely even qualifies as a storm as far as I'm concerned. I've been through four or five of those little things, tropical storms, Category 1. We stay busy for two or three days, and then everything goes back to normal. When you get up to around the two or three, then I'd start worrying.
Because, see, you get that headline, and then you know, the whole thing just falls apart. Mm-hmm. After Erica brings heavy... This is from Alex Sosnowski, AccuWeather senior meteorologist. After Erica brings heavy rain and locally gusty winds from Hispaniola east to eastern Cuba into Friday night, the system will move toward the Bahamas, the Keys, and South Florida this weekend. And then you get... Erica remains a tropical storm, spinning about 95 miles southwest of Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic as of 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time Friday. Maximum sustained winds were 50 miles an hour. Erica will track across Haiti Friday night. According to AccuWeather hurricane expert Dan Kotlowski, Erica is a very disjointed tropical system at this time and is likely to weaken to a tropical depression as it crosses Hispaniola and part of Cuba Friday night into Saturday. So after Erica to lash Florida. I mean, lashes hurt, okay? But it apparently actually translates to Erica is going to rain on Florida.
And get us closer to being out of the drought we're in. Yeah, that's about it. That's going to be the nice, beautiful, breezy days, a couple days after it starts going by and all the rain bands are gone. It'll be cooled off and...
I mean, there is a downside.
It could go to the beach.
It could do something squirrely and wind up in the eastern Gulf of Mexico, and that's when they turn into trouble because they can just sit there and churn and build up steam. Then it hits the Florida Panhandle, and maybe it's a Cat 1.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it has, but it's
good.
Time
but it's good. But it's good. But it's good for the dairies and the bakeries, right?
Yeah, if it had enough time in between Cuba and here, which I don't think it will. I mean, the water temperature down here is like 89 degrees.
Well, I got an email here from our buddy Bermuda Sand, and the subject line is, "Can't take it. I can't take it anymore. Never thought in a million years that I would be watching Fox News with On the Record with Greta. CNN and MSNBC have the Donald at some fundraiser. What the hell's going on? Trump 24/7. Like Charles Blow said, enough is enough. I'm rather surprised at MSNBC all damn day. Trump. Trump having breakfast. Trump going to a press conference. Trump using the bathroom. Trump using the bathroom press conference. It'll only get worse next week when he trots out the family." Bermuda Sand says, "Please, Bob, I beg of you, make it stop. I wish I could." And you know, I don't know. I think for our part here, we can play some small part in making it stop. Maybe Charles Blow's right. Maybe not talking about him is the best thing we can do.
Yeah. Hey, check this out. The wife was saying he came to Greenville the other day, and I guess the news report was that wherever he had his event was sold out.
Because he's selling tickets now?
I guess so.
Yeah, but the tickets are huge.
This fucker's out there just making money. It's all he's trying to do is make more money. Has anybody even, other than flying around the country, running his god-awful, ugly mouth that looks like an anus, has he even spent any money on this campaign? Or the press has done it all for him, haven't they?
He just has to pay for the jet and the helicopter.
That's it, as far as I can tell. That's all he's done.
I got a news flash for you.
Yeah?
Only 2 hours till On Point with Sarah Palin on One America News Network's interview with Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and Ted and Jeb Bush.
What, no Ted Nugent? Wow, what a great big steaming pile of irrelevant.
You ought to check out their Facebook page. It's got Sarah Palin sitting at a desk with a flag and the White House behind her and a monitor thing with Donald Trump on it. She's sitting there looking like a news anchor.
Is this thing for real?
For real.
Where do you watch this? I might have to check it out.
Do you have a AT&T UVerse?
No.
Or Verizon Fios?
Oh, come on, it's got to be on the internet somewhere.
Well, that's what's on this link on Facebook here. I'm looking at. It was on Mother Jones this morning.
You know, Mother
plans tonight. Cancel them. Sarah Palin is interviewing Donald Trump.
Mother Jones needs to not do that. I think the real Mother Jones probably wouldn't do that. So maybe they should take that as their poll star. WWMJD. What would Mother Jones do? I don't think she'd give free publicity to an ignorant, bigoted plutocrat, oligarch, jerk. But Bermuda Sands, right? I mean, I don't know. I think if you go to the cooking channel, you'll probably get inundated with that guy. Maybe we need to stop saying his name. Maybe we don't even say T-Rump anymore. What do you think?
What do you just call him? Ass Mouth.
Yep. Blowhard. Devin nominates Ted Nugent, Turd Nugget. Oh, and speaking of nicknames, did you guys happen to catch the fact that one of the people marking the 10th anniversary of Katrina is none other than Heck of a Job Brownie?
Hey, George, W is down in New Orleans today touring.
Well, in Politico today, they gave him a whole bunch of column inches in a piece entitled "Stop Blaming Me for Hurricane Katrina." 10 years later, the name Brownie is still identified with the government's failures. Here's what really happened. And guess whose fault it all turns out to be?
Obama.
Anderson Cooper. They wouldn't.
What?
Yeah, I know. What, Edith? Huh? No, it's Anderson Cooper's fault. Because if Anderson Cooper hadn't rented his... Well, okay, so they wouldn't let him, Anderson Cooper and his cameraman, into their rescue boat. So he went and rented a different boat, and Brownie now says that that led to distorted coverage. And it's Ray Nagin's fault, and it's the governor of Louisiana's fault, and it's everybody's fault except Brownie and Dim Leader. While I was urging people to leave New Orleans, Mayor Nagin announced a shelter of last resort, the New Orleans Superdome. In other words, despite calls to evacuate, if you choose not to evacuate or are now unable to evacuate because you lack transportation, run to the Superdome. I was livid. Yeah, Brownie was livid.
I thought they didn't have enough buses and stuff to evacuate everybody.
Well, there was that problem, wasn't there? But I mean, if you want to read a giant exercise in revisionism, you want to read this. When CNN's Anderson Cooper asked shortly after Katrina hit to accompany one of those teams so he could record the rescue of victims, my instinctive answer was to decline the request. The rescue boats carried the minimum crew members necessary to maximize space for victims. If I let a national news figure and a cameraman on a rescue boat, that boat would have had two fewer spots on it for victims in need of rescuing. My answer, no, you can't go. Big mistake in hindsight. Cooper and his cameraman rented a boat and with total disregard or ignorance of the systematic grid-driven rescue of victims, managed to find a house with victims yet to be rescued. As Cooper and his cameraman reported on their rescue, the inevitable question of where the rescuers are was asked, and the next stage of blame began. Based on that one, isolated, out-of-context rescue, And you know, you hate it when your rescues are out of context, don't you? The narrative was set that the rescue efforts were disjointed, in disarray, and uncoordinated. Nothing could have been further from the truth. An organized plan existed to rescue each of those people. The whiter, the better. Now, I added that part. But, I mean, this thing goes on and on and on. And it's all a game. It's a blame game. And, of course, he was sending emails back and forth talking about how awesome he looked in his blue shirt. And he doesn't like that either. They were selectively edited, the emails were.
Well, the new head of FEMA sure got a shout-out from Obama yesterday in his speech.
Oh, yeah?
Because I love me some Craig Fugate. He was sitting down in the front row somewhere next to the mayor of New Orleans. Forget his name.
Well, it's all being happy-faced. And I go back to what Kate said last night about what Trombone Shorty says. Don't even know people around here anymore. Oh, and by the way, it's about 27 minutes before the hour, about 27 minutes left in the conversation this evening. After Cindy jumped in and knocked out a big chunk of the fundraising this evening, we remain... And thanks to Jan and Jerry earlier in the day, we remain at $80 to go for the evening and $280 to go to finish out the month. So there it is. But $80 just to stay out of the hole by finishing out fundraising for the week. So anybody wanting to help is more than welcome to do so. All right, people are too quiet. This is not a filibobster.
Okay, I got a feel-good story.
Yeah?
You heard of Anthony Sadler, one of the three on the train?
Yeah.
Well, Sacramento State has set up a scholarship fund for him.
Nice. So he'll get his college finished off?
Yeah, he's a senior studying kinesiology.
Yeah.
Sacramento State President Robert S. Nelson said it is in response to numerous requests from people who want to recognize Sadler's courage. Money will go directly to Sadler and help pay tuition, books, and other expenses. The donations are not tax deductible.
Because he's not a 501c3. He's just a kid trying to finish college.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I heard the word kinesiology used. I was a kid. There was I guess he was a relief pitcher for the Dodgers, Mike Marshall, and he was trained in kinesiology. And the broadcasters thought, "My, what a funny sounding word that is."
Is that the study of movement of muscles or something?
Yeah, it's the study of like. I think that's exactly what it is.
So he's probably going to be in sports medicine or something.
Well, I think Mike Marshall studied it from the standpoint of being a pitcher and trying to understand how not to blow his arm out. Well, Larry, you've been real quiet this evening.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I sort of decided I would listen for a while and not really contribute to the discussion until keep focused on the discussion so that I would stay relevant because I think that's what's being, asked for. So in any case, how are you doing? You all right?
I think we're all pretty much okay.
Yeah. I'm glad I don't pay attention to the news cycle, because I would just upset myself. But I think I would like to get, you know how we used to say, thanks, Obama. Well, tonight I'd like to say, thanks, Jason, for his comments about Palin and Trump and all that.
Yeah, by email, our buddy Luda suggests we rename him the Feckless One. But I thought they'd already named Obama Feckless.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so I'm just listening and hoping that I can stay reasonably balanced. I kind of would like to see a movement away from the Democratic Leadership Council domination of the Democratic Party, moving more leftward, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. I'm really frustrated with with public policy and the public discourse in the society. That's all I can say. I've just had enough of the DLC and wish they would go away already.
How do you feel about the RNC?
Well, I try to not pay attention to the clown car, the Looney Tunes clown car on the other side, because I don't think they bring up anything that's, I don't think that they're, that party should not be taken seriously.
But Larry,
I know they're dangerous, but they shouldn't be taken seriously.
Then what would happen to freedom?
I don't know. I really don't know. I was going to ask, this is something that has some substance. I was going to ask, why is it that all the police departments in the country don't get together and do gun buybacks and offer a gun buyback? You bring your gun in to the police department and we'll give you some money for the gun. People get rid of their guns that way.
Yeah, but you know what the problem there is, Larry? By example, there was an incident a couple of years ago. I remember talking about it live a few years back. It's all beginning to run together now. But a man, disgruntled, and of course disgruntled, started shooting, I think, at the D.C. Metro station for the Pentagon. And I don't think he managed to kill anybody. But they did bother to try to find out where he got his firearm. Of course, to do that now would be a blatant exercise in hating freedom. But it turned out that he got his firearm at a gun show where it was put back into the stream of commerce by the Memphis Police Department. It had been confiscated in some crime or some such. And the several states have laws, many of them do, Larry, that says that if the police have firearms that don't belong to anybody, that they may not destroy them, that they must resell them, because freedom.
How come you're the first person that's told me that? Because that's something that I've never heard before. I don't pay strict attention to the whys and wherefores of gun ownership, but I do know that in the past the media has trumpeted these kinds of events. Maybe it's for police PR more than anything else, that say the police are having a gun buyback. Come in and bring your gun, and we'll give you some money for it. So maybe it's all a part of the, publicity and promotions for the police departments.
Well, maybe California doesn't have a law like that, but your guns equal freedom so-called red states, more than a couple of them do. A police department may not destroy a functioning firearm. Now, if it would be a public danger, like there's something broken in the gun, and it might not work as a gun, but instead just hurt somebody, you can destroy one of those. But if it's a perfectly functional gun that is capable of killing another human being, it has to go back into the stream of commerce, because otherwise Jesus will kill kittens.
Wow.
Well,
you know, they had a couple of those gun buybacks down here after Newtown. A couple of the city police departments put them on.
Well,
Where do you think they get the money to buy the guns with?
Plantation. I have no idea. Well, taxpayers, I'd assume.
Yeah, well, I don't consider myself to be the most balanced or rational of people, but I think that's really nuts. That don't make no sense. That really doesn't make any sense. I mean, it really doesn't, Bob.
Larry, I don't recall asserting that it did. But
make those things work here like they did it in Australia.
Well, yeah, and that's a question for our friends like Robert and David and others in Australia. After the Port Arthur massacre, when there was that massive gun buyback, what did Australia do with the firearms? I mean, I'm guessing they didn't just crate them up and, you know, send them to some rebels somewhere, in Chad. But in the United States, especially in Redneckistan, or Jesus Land, is a better term, harming a gun is like child abuse or something. It's just awful. It's not the gun's fault. I mean, if you listen to right-wing radio for the last 2 days talking about what happened at Smith Mountain Lake in Virginia, all the right-wingers say, well, of course it's not the gun's fault. Like, the gun has goddamn feelings. Damn it, made the gun cry, and now it's rusting a little bit.
Well, here's another story. I don't know if you've heard this story. Those of you that live in L.A., probably Timmy knows about it. There's a political cartoonist that about 14 years ago, he was stopped for jaywalking by the Los Angeles Police Department. And he talked about it in a column in May. And then the reason why the police department targeted him is that he was critical of how the LAPD handled jaywalking cases. So he comments on it. And then the Times gets in touch with the police department, or the police department gets in touch with the Times and says, this guy is full of, you know, doesn't know what he's talking about. And they send a tape, which has been heavily doctored. And this journalist doesn't have a job. He's a political cartoonist, and now he doesn't have a job. His name is Ted Rall. So I don't know if you all have heard about that, but Timmy may have, but.
I heard about it the other day, Larry. I don't forget if I saw it. It was on Facebook somewhere.
Yeah. So,
I know what might actually work in this country. Yeah, instead of having a gun buyback, and you allow these right wingers to come in, and if they trade in enough guns, you give them a penis implant operation.
Yeah.
And then that solves the whole problem of them wanting the guns.
But would getting rid of the guns get rid of the crazy, though? I mean, I don't know if getting rid of the guns is going to get rid of the crazy part of the
No, Larry, but that's a separate part of the American dialogue, to be fair. You know, mental health. And we, you know, we remain, even though we would like to think we're getting better, we remain pretty brutal in regard to mental health issues. Nobody goes around saying that, you know, that if you're diabetic, you shouldn't be able to get a gun, or diabetes will make you go and shoot up a, you know, shoot up a Kiwanis Club meeting. And I don't think it's necessary. You know, the vast majority of mentally ill people don't choose to shoot anything themselves, anybody else, you know, squirrels, goldfish, nothing.
Yeah.
So it's too easy a connection, if you know what I mean.
Okay. You know,
and mental health is one discussion. Ease of access to firearms is another. And the fact of the matter is, you know, because I've done this, if you walk into a gun store and buy a brand new shooting iron, you know, you can I mean, for a really good brand like a Sig Sauer or a Colt or something like that, you can get north of $1,000 if you're not careful, easy. But at a gun show, where you know, all you have to have is a pulse to get in. Nothing. I mean, guns are decidedly cheaper there. And I mean, no background check, no nothing. You put the money on the table and you walk away with your handful of death.
Oh God. Well, I'm glad I don't know where they are.
I'm sure there's one right around the corner from you. I mean, gun shows are all over America. It's a huge business, and there's no way to track them. There's no way to trace them. There's no way to keep. I don't know, and nobody does. And remember, you know, that weak little pathetic bit of a response to the Sandy Hook massacre that was championed by my senator Joe Manchin, bless his heart, was just going to close the gun show loophole. And America had a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy and kittens with crocheted tails over it. Or at least the gunster baiters did. And so we don't have it and can't have it. And by the way, Robert in Australia writing in to let us know, Bob, guns purchased in the gun buybacks after the Port Arthur massacre were destroyed. I think they were crushed and then they were melted down. One or the other, or both, I'll look it up. They were not resold. Getting rid of the guns won't get rid of the crazy, but it does stop them from shooting people.
That's true. Thank you, Robert. Lastly, school started for me. So I'm taking a new course called Sociology of Gender. So if you want to talk about different forms of feminism, or different feminisms, or third wave feminism, how that intersects with all the other isms, you know, like racism and sexism and you know, poverty and class and social stratification, I may be able to tell you a few things in a few weeks.
Oh, that'll be fun. I know we'll enjoy that.
Okay.
And by the way, with 10 minutes to go in the program, I want to thank Leo. Leo just jumped in to help, and we are now only $50 away from being done with fundraising for the week and having a clean start for Monday. So thank you very kindly, Leo. Thank you very much indeed. We had that little interlude that began this Friday on the front porch. The woman in this is good. Wait, before I go there, from the chat room, Earther says, my firearm sales standard is, sir, do you think the government is going to take your guns? You do? I'm sorry. I can't sell you a gun. Because that's a pretty good indicator that you're dealing with somebody who is not maybe particularly suited to firearms ownership. But then again, the problem is a vast majority of firearms owners in the United States think that Kenyan Muslim socialist is going to get our guns. Right. But no, just you were going to say something, Sparky?
Oh, I wanted to just tell Larry, there's a gun show in Vallejo this weekend.
Well, luckily, that's very hard for me to get to, and I'm not going to go there.
I will guarantee you, Larry, I will guarantee you, I haven't looked, I haven't researched, nothing, but I will guarantee you that there is a market out there and someone has responded, you know, because the market hates for there to be a need that's unresponded to because capitalism and free market and everything. I'll guarantee you there are specialized holsters for people who have to use wheelchairs.
Yes.
And you know what? A wheelchair being a wheelchair, I'll bet they've got a holster for rifles.
Yeah.
Although I hate to think, and I'm not being a smartass here, but I halfway am. I hate to think what the recoil would be like.
Yeah, that would be really hard.
You could wind up half a block away just trying to protect freedom.
That's right. And you know what? They'd put a pillar up in the middle of Berkeley if I ever did that, and they'd string me up, and there I would be up on a pole.
For protecting freedom.
Larry, just Google wheelchair gun mount.
You've already been there, Sparky?
Yeah.
Oh, God,
pictures no. And everything.
Oh, God, no help.
Maybe a Twin 40 anti-aircraft affair? I mean, what?
Well, it's mostly rifles, it looks like.
Well, if the world goes in the direction that a number of us in the chat room have been generally talking about, I hope it doesn't, and I hope I die first. But if the world goes in a more dystopic situation and it gets unimaginably like Blade Runner or some of these other dystopias. What was that movie that you told us to watch, Dunk? That there was a movie about the end of the world or after the world or something. It was a movie you suggested for us to watch.
Idiocracy?
Something like that. It was a post-apocalyptic, almost said apocalyptic, a pop apocalyptic film. I can look it up. Anyway,
even a picture of a.
It's an old guy, and he's thinking back about the past and what the world is like now, and then he looks back and to how the world was, you know, way back when, or you know, a few decades earlier, and all that. Anyway, I can remind you of it after the show.
There's even all-terrain wheelchairs with mini guns mounted on pictures.
God, well, the only person that would get shot in a situation like that would be me, because I wouldn't know how to use it, and I would want to have a psychological test,
you can't do that, Larry, because then you'll start a trend, and then the jackbooted thugs will be stepping on our necks with their booted jacks, keeping us from having Second Amendment freedom by thinking that everybody needs a psychological. Oh, for pity's sake.
Oh, for God's sake. Well, yeah. Anyway,
thank you. And by the way, just let me say this, Larry. When wheelchair gun mounts are outlawed, only outlaws will have wheelchair gun mounts. Just remember that, because freedom. You know. Yeah. Wolverines! Right. Yeah. And by the way, Jack in Shreveport notes that wheelchair gun mount would be a good name for a band. Robert in Australia following up says, Australia confiscated 650,000 guns, murders and suicides plummeted. The gun buyback was mandatory. The government took away all the types of guns that have been declared illegal. As South Park would say, they took our guns! Owners were paid a fair price, and it was one of the few good things John Howard did as Prime Minister. And see, that's like I had posited last night. Maybe what we do is we offer to pay twice fair market value. But since you can't, destroy a gun, once it's been bought back, then they just go back into the stream of commerce, and some gun fundamentalist, some ammosexual, just buys it and sells it back for twice the amount of money again. And the next thing you know, we're broke, and everybody's still got guns. It's a tough question here. And by the way, thanks going out this evening to our good friend Thomas Jug of Punch. Yeah, Jug, damn it. He took care of fundraising this evening, and so consequently, Our fundraising goal for Monday is now $199.37 because you guys love loose change. Thanks, Chuck. Thank you so very much. With the note, have a carol start of the week. So I guess it's time to get out of here. By the way, Marty reminds me, the right-wingers, the gundamentalists, the gunsterbaiters are having a hissy now because Mark Hamill, who used firearms to save the Republic from the Empire in the Star Wars, put out a tweet saying that, you know, it worked after the Port Arthur massacre, why not here? And they called him a fucking embarrassment. Why don't you just move to Australia then, Mark Hamill, you Mark Hamill? Poopy head. No, really. So, thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jay Cruzen. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Roger. And thanks, Billable Rick. Accepting thanks is worth at least one-tenth of a billable hour. Thank you. I really appreciate the conversation on these Fridays. It means a great deal. And thanks to everybody who helped take care of fundraising this evening, Jan and Jerry and Cindy and Leo and Jug a Punch. Thank you very kindly. Thanks for the food porn. I'm starving now. I'm definitely going across the river for some salsa. And thanks to all of you who spend your time listening. And, oh, my God, a photograph just in from Sylvia. My prize tomato this year, a Virginia Sweet, 3 pounds. Wow. That is a bit of lobed beauty. Yum. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. Thanks going out, of course, to all of our family commune congregation. Thanks going out to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Lottie and Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Catch you for more and Monday.